Welcome to Dominate for Two, a War Machine and Hordes podcast.
I'm Alex.
I'm Mark.
I'm Benjamin.
And today we have with us a special guest and listener of the show, Arthur Continelli, coming on to talk about a topic he pitched to us surrounding Kador and the relatively recent hype surrounding Armored Core and what it does for Kador's competitive viability.
I'm just going to give a real quick alternative title to this episode: Why Kador Sucks and So Do You If You Play Them. That's what you meant, right, Arthur?
That's abusive.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and lead us into the topic?
All right. Hello, everyone. My name is Arthur Continelli. I'm from Staten Island. We have a pretty decent meta. I started playing probably 2010. My first faction was Kador. I currently have six factions now, but, you know, that's kind of normal. And I haven't really touched Kador too much in Mark III because I'm under the impression that you can't seriously take them to a tournament and expect high-end results.
That's exactly the problem, actually, that drove me out of Kador relatively recently, was basically a continuous dissatisfaction with the place the faction was landing in the metagame. And the steamroller 2017 and now 2018 scenario paradigms that kind of required you to play in theme. And it's, you know, since the advent of theme forces, it's felt really difficult to build a comprehensive Kador pair that doesn't just leave you absolutely flailing into some relatively common problems. For example, it was Mark's trolls that kind of broke me on the faction. Like, I really can't comprehend. Like, I can't answer.
Whoa! Don't put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby.
You were straight up the one that was like, I can't deal with this. This faction is not going to work if I think this is going to show up, you know, reliably and consistently. Before that, it was Ghost Fleet.
I've been talking to a lot of my locals who are Alec, the Convergence player. He was saying, like, oh, I basically have to be able to beat trolls, because if I'm planning on, like, getting a prize at a tournament, I have to run into you eventually. And I keep on telling him that, like, if you prep for standard trolls, it's never going to work against my trolls, because I don't play, like, any of the other, like, major popular troll lists.
But... Well, and let's be clear, we didn't abandon Kador simply because Mark's an asshole. We decided that...
Well, I'm always an asshole. That's a constant.
All right. I had the same thing. I was actually thinking about going back to Kador because I was, you know, excited about the new option. I hadn't actually pulled them out of the stable in a long time. And I kept doing the consideration, and when I was working with Alex as well to try to come up with a solid tournament pair for him, you know, we kept running into the same sort of wall that there wasn't too... strong list options that worked well together that answered the problem. And genuinely, we always came down to the fact that currently the issue appears to be much more related to the really poor design and lack of flexibility in the themes than it is what's natively available to Kador in general. Because their combined arms faction historically, you know, from the very beginning, they have some great combined arms units, and their themes basically disallow them from using any of the tools included in their faction to solve those problems.
So I kind of look at it as, you know, this, it's kind of a multi-pronged problem with Kador. Their themes are not that good. That would be my first one. The second one would be that the faction has a major lack of what I will refer to as meta questions. So stealth, magic, things of that nature.
Oh God, yeah, magic.
And it's very one-dimensional. It's supposed to be a numbers faction, I hear people say, but is it really?
What do you mean by a numbers faction?
So raw statage.
Yeah, people look at it, and they talk like, oh, all your jacks are armor 20. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, okay, so what? Signar is armor 22. You know, Crix is now armor 19. And basically, everything's 20.
Yeah, trolls are 20, and their beasts have dramatically more output than a Kador heavy, even most of the premium ones.
Yeah, but we pay at least 15 points for our heavies.
Yeah, I mean, beasts are going to be better than Jax for output. I mean, I can live with that.
Well, yeah, it's a numbers faction, and the numbers that are good, apart from maybe strength and damage values on infantry, don't get buffed at all in the context of the faction. It's like you have a high number like armor 20 printed baseline, but that's about as high as it gets realistically.
So, you know, there is one other thing that no one talks about ever, and I don't understand why. And that is for Mark III, Kadar across the board basically took a minus 4 defensive swing.
The built-in minus 1 from things like Chaosy Assassins getting toned down, and then the minus 3 coming from the substantial change to Iron Flesh.
Exactly, and Iron Fang Pikemen especially, too. Winterguard.
They really got hurt.
Winterguard lost Bob and Weave.
Yeah, and that seems to be something that, on a balance level, like I feel like that's not been factored into Kador's strengths or the filling of that design space. You know, most of the casters who had Iron Flesh remained basically unchanged, apart from that change to Iron Flesh. And, you know, plus 2 armor and immunity to blast damage, like, you have 2 benefits that are kind of exclusive to one another. Units that benefit from the one typically don't gain the advantage of the other. It's in a situation like Inviolable Resolve was in Mark II. You know, a minor defensive buff that it's like, it's all you have, but it's not very good. You'll still cast it, but it went from being a premium A-list defensive buff to kind of a weak second stringer. And, you know, a lot of Kador's units had play based around that massive defensive swing. Like Winter Guard Infantry losing Bob and Weave. Sure, Iron Flesh makes them immune to blast damage, but their armor value is not high enough to survive anything, really. And like you can only pump so much support into them, and inside that context, they're just not very good.
Well, and I know that this probably won't be a popular thing to say, but I think that Kador actually suffered from a lot of the same issues that Scorn suffered from in the beginning of Mark III, but they haven't been corrected yet, where they got toned down in a vacuum based on what was in Mark II without any context for what was actually going on in Mark III.
Actually, Kador, I disagree with that.
Yeah, I disagree with that.
Kador was incredibly dominant up until...
But Kador was only... let me finish here. Like, Kador was only dominant because of the pricing mistake on Berserkers and how Karchev was. And with that gone, the whole faction has fallen flat on its face, but the whole faction was already in that state. The only reason it had that outlier is because Karchev combination was bonkers, but everything else in the faction just wasn't very good. And if you look at the lists that were going along with Karchev, you know, they were all just sort of whatever rando other thing people threw in because they knew Karchev was going to carry them. And now,
so I disagree with this. It did continue past Karchev because there was Harkovich with the Jack spam. There was Vlad Rockets, which basically was, I would say, a minor boogeyman up until Ghost Fleet got Dark Host to pair with it, and you actually started seeing Krix in large numbers with Incorporeal.
I'm going to fight you at some point on the whole Vlad Rockets thing, but
I've never liked Vlad Rockets.
Yes, I haven't. But the Karchev thing, though, I don't think is what propped it up, because out of the gate, Kador was Kador and Retribution were among the stronger factions in the game. And, you know, if you go back and listen to podcasts from like 2 years
even
ago,
early themes,
the consensus is basically uniform that Kador and Retribution are among the strongest factions in the game. You know, Kador had access to all of its tools, and when all of its tools are layered together, the faction works very well. For me, the big turning point, and this showed up in both my WTC preparation and my actual poor WTC performance, I think the big change was a conjunction of all the factions getting more themes, And you know, just sort of the advantage that that is. And then the change in the steamroller format that basically militated that you have themes because there are so many more pieces of geometry and because they require different unit types to score, you have to have a massive redundancy of units, solos, and battle group in your list to be scenario relevant and scenario effective. And that was just not something I was preparing for playing in a pre-theme world. And when I actually saw it in action, like, oh, holy crap, this changes everything. And Kador's themes are weak. Like, Kador's themes have poor free options, poor selection overall, generally weak benefits. Like, ooh, this is a rough world for Kador. And I think it was both the advent of theme forces and then the change in the scenario that basically required you to play theme forces that did it.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember in the beginning of Mach 3, we were still using the 2016 packet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know, like, when I first saw Mach 3, and I was like, oh my god, Kador is going to be glorious because now all my Jacks have this free power-up focus. And I played a whole bunch of games, and it was glorious. I mean, it was amazing. And then the rest of the themes came, and then the format changed as far as the packet, and then it was over.
Yeah, and it was a really swift and sudden collapse, too. So, like, if I had to point to something, that would be it. And, you know, we can go, like, line item by line item through the theme forces and why that transition didn't work. Like, just winding it back, you know, when I was playing Sorsha 1, Butcher 3, and the Butcher 3 eventually changed in a Winter Guard command, but it didn't have that big solo or unit redundancy that SR-18 required. I was playing two out of theme lists in Kador, and for, you know, a little over a year, my win rate in tournaments was over 90%. And then with the SR change and the events I did after that, like, my performance really dropped off a cliff. And it's because those list archetypes were just not adapted to the environment that the steamroller packet put you in.
I don't think Butcher 3 got hit very much by the steamroller packet. Would you disagree with that?
Well, the caster, no, but I mean, the style of lists I was playing that were supremely suited to something like SR-16 were no longer working in 17.
That's fair. I mean, like, you need to be able to play in themes so you get, like, the extra three solos or so that most themes give you so that you're able to actually hold flags and still focus on enough pieces for rectangle and circle zones. But I feel like Butcher in particular is a board bully where you don't care about scenario. You're just going to get in the middle of it, and you're going to either force your opponent to cede to on attrition, scenario, or assassination if you play it correctly. And I think Vlad Rockets is the same way. You really don't like Vlad Rockets, and I'm sure we'll get into it later in the episode, but I think you could play them as a safer board bully with lower output.
Well, let's just go ahead and get into that. I mean, I think we're probably at a point where it's, you know, a good idea to discuss why does what Kador has in its theme forces and common list paradigms not work in the environment of today.
I already posited incorporeal is actually a huge deal, whereas in the beginning of Mark 3, it wasn't. There was basically no incorporeal whatsoever.
Incorporeal became a much bigger deal. Kador has very limited native access to magic weapons. And the rough part, the way the themes are constructed, you know, Kador has a whole class of units that are specialized in magic weapons, but they're segregated completely away from the rest of the faction. Like, that combined arms dynamic under which Kador really thrives, it's forbidden from doing. Like, you can't splash in some Greylord stuff apart from maybe a Forge Seer marshaling a Jack. 80% of your list variations are not going to have ready access to that kind of magic weapon unless it's coming off the caster. The other ones are magic weapons and grievous wounds, which are becoming increasingly important abilities in the game. And Kador has just historically had really poor access to those, especially if it wasn't coming off something like Alton Ashley. And in a world of single solos that you're allowed to take from mercs, you know, he's never at the top of the list.
Okay, so question for you guys, just like a quick poll, because I'm interested in this. Like, how valuable do you actually find Grievous Wounds? Lots of people talk about Grievous Wounds, but I'm a Trolls player, and I mean, admittedly, I'm playing some weird lists that aren't like quite standard, but I really don't care if somebody has Grievous Wounds.
Well, I'm thinking here of things like Chosen of Everblight beginning to pop up, prevalence of Tough, and Grievous Wounds is maybe a little bit of overkill for dealing with that. But, you know, Takedown is also a rare ability in Kador at all ends. Anywho, like, I was running Sorsha 1. Grievous Wounds is a big deal to Sorsha 1. And there's very little access to that. I mean, now there's the Strike Tanker, but again, if you want to run an effective Sorsha 1 list with a Strike Tanker, that basically has to be out of theme.
Yeah, it just kind of feels like turn over turn value where Grievous Wounds would matter just doesn't. Like, you're going to one round something or you're not, and it's going to go badly for you.
Yeah, I think it's valuable in like control or paralysis situations where you're stalling somebody, or when you're dealing with a healing, like substantial healing as defense mechanism, which didn't used to exist and does now. In the form of Chosen, Abby 1, and a couple other things like Harbinger.
But again, shouldn't you be one-rounding those things anyways? Like, Chosen, if you get up in their business and you don't kill them, then, like, aren't you going to have a huge problem? Like, sure, hyper-regeneration and Tough, but, like, I feel like the meta has sufficient armor in it, and the kind of things you're going to want to drop into Primal Terrors, you're going to be trying to one-shot those guys anyways.
I mean, the thing is, that's difficult for Kador in a lot of respects. Something like Iron Fang Pikemen under an Irisk are going to deal with Chosen in 1 to 2 hits anyways.
I think Vlad Rockets is going to 1 or 2 shot them as well.
I don't know. If you actually do the math on it, it's really poor for killing them. Like, you chip on a couple of points and then your damage basically hovers at a consistent level against them. And that's even with Signs and Portents thrown into the math, you know, because
they're going to... And Iona and Holt?
Well, I mean, and Iona and Holt, I'm not counting, but, like, I'm also, you know, in my head math, not counting the ubiquity of armor buffs in Terrors.
That's fair.
I think we're falling into this typical trap where we're talking about one particular game in which, yes, Kador can always do some damage in the dojo. And then you get it on the table. You know, you guys keep mentioning Vlad Rockets. I think that list is terrible.
I found another one.
One stealth unit, that list is done. A stealth caster, that list is done.
I'm entirely willing to concede that. But continue. I want you
no,
to
so it's
your
like
point.
I really think Kador is a fantastic faction when it fights Kador and nothing else.
It's still quite good at fighting minions, by the way.
All right, fair enough. And it might even be okay into Rhett, because
Rhett's still fine into
Rhett. I think
Rhett
it needs
well, yeah.
tech love more than anything else. Like Vlad Rockets, if you had a reliable way to de-stealth things, like that would be way better. If you had more access to magical weapons, that would be way better. And
well, that's one of the problems of the faction, though, is, you know, just on their own in a world where themes aren't, you know, in a certain sense mandated by the scenarios, Kador can actually put all those answers together in one list and it really works. And I haven't gone back and explored this, but I've built a bunch of lists and I've been pondering, like, what if I just run Kador out of theme? Because I feel like that's how you have to do it. And I haven't put the legwork in to determine if it really can be viable right now. But I still get the impression it's not, because your opponent's going to be getting so many extra legs up on you. And in other factions, they don't have to pay the same kind of sacrifices.
I think you're actually on the right track, though. The existing theme forces could never have the answers, or even, you know, everybody could take Iona and Holt. Okay, great. And everybody could take, what's his name? The little gobber, Reinhold.
Winterguard Command can't, but that's its own issue.
Yes.
Yeah, why?
Legion of Steel can't take character units. What the hell?
Because they don't want you having good abilities combined.
Isn't like Kador the only faction that has those restrictions on their themes? Maybe Signar?
With the exception of Heavy Metal not allowing, units? And you can take the Siege Crawler? That's it. Nobody else has those weird restrictions.
I think it would be much healthier if those were lifted. I also feel like you guys should have access to the Bogtrog Mist Speaker.
Yeah, that's another one. Eyeless Sight and Cloud Outs. Kador has to use positioning alone, basically, unless you're playing Vlad 2.
You have the Spriggan that just got buffed.
Yeah, actually, but it's expensive.
It is kind of funny that Crix just got basically Eyeless Sight or Magic Weapon or whatever it is on that attachment. Yeah, it's like, so the faction that has the most amount of answers just got another tool. Like, why?
Well, because they need to be able to beat themselves in the mirror match. Otherwise, Crix won't be able to beat Crix. And if Crix can't beat Crix, what are we doing?
So, you know how people always talk about Signar privilege?
Yes.
Okay, I actually think there's, like, I don't want to call it privilege. I don't even know what the right word is. But if it's for Kador, it's always, like, minus one. It's, like, whatever everybody else got, minus one. Theme bonuses are probably the greatest example in the world of this.
I was personally very surprised that they didn't more aggressively just, like, do a makeover on the themes when Kador was in CID. Because they kind of nerfed, what was it, Jaws of the Wolf? That was the one with the anti-AD. I can never remember the names.
Yeah, that's the one.
Like, so it had a brutally powerful anti-AD theme, which, like, really helped with, like, being able to set up your heavies that were, like, nominally slower. And then they're like, oh, this screws over Wormwood and Circle in general. We can't have that. And then so they're just like, no ambushing. That's good enough, right? Ambushing is good, right? And... I think they needed to give a real theme bonus there.
There were so many things. Like, I actually don't understand why the Juggernaut went up a point. It's not that I'm so against it or anything like that, but I didn't see a ton of them anyway. I saw a ton of Marauders, but I never saw a ton of Juggernauts. So why?
Yeah, same here. Like, in my own usage and playing of the faction, I was basically coming around to the conclusion that the Juggernaut, while 12 points looks like a good cost point, if it can get there and do its damage, it's fine, but it's not fast enough. I was actually coming around to the perspective that the Kodiak was preferable in almost all circumstances anyways, just because of the sheer amount of utility and better, like, board control function of it.
The Kodiak is the best Jack in Kador.
It's phenomenal, yeah.
Yeah, I'd agree.
But, you know, there were, like, little things that could have been done, especially in that CID. Like, why did Beast 09 not get a magical axe? I mean, would have that really been beyond the scope?
Yeah, and I've been, I think you had a good way of putting it, like, Kador is minus one. Like, I look through War Room and I find myself thinking, if this model was a Signar model, what would its rules look like? And it's not necessarily the stats that are minus one, but, like, they have too few abilities relative to their cost and native stats and the kind of support they're going to be getting. But, you know, that the really tight-fisted, limited design philosophy that's followed with Kador is not followed in other factions, even in the context of their own support.
So the Forge Seer would have been able to just hand out a magical weapon for the turn if it wasn't Kador. It wouldn't have been, oh, you have to Jack Marshall this Jack. He would just be able to go around and be like, I could power up, or I can make your weapons magical. What do you want?
And that's what he should be doing right now. Like, it's ridiculous he can't do that.
Well, alternatively, you look at somebody like Arlen Strangeways in Signar, who does just hand out magic weapons for all attacks as a star action. He's basically a superior version of the Forge Seer, up to and including having better defensive stats.
And a spray.
And he's on a smaller base, and he has the same amount of boxes, right? Like, he has arbitrarily 8 boxes?
Yep, and he has a higher speed. The only thing he's missing is melee offense.
He has a cool wrench, though.
But, I mean, I don't want to get, like, bogged down into design and intention of the designers.
No, let's
read
out for an hour.
Like, we very much have to play the game in front of us and not the game we wish we had. Like, yeah, Kador has all of these limitations that feel painful and arbitrary, but they're the limitations we have. And I think the biggest symptom, like, I just want to run through the theme forces real quick, leaving out Armored Core, because I know we want to come back to that. That's been kind of the heart and soul of the commentators, like, renaissance of Kador versus the actual play renaissance. Winter Guard Command. Sac Pawn to Winter Guard is, on the face of it, a really strong ability. It allows for a lot of caster security. The problem is you have just Winter Guard and Assault Commandos, which don't count toward free points and aren't very good anyway, that you wouldn't want to take. You have Winter Guard and Warjacks, and the two don't support each other effectively. Like, in a lot of Kador themes, the Warjacks are left to do a lot of the backbone, like, support and business work, but without, you know, they need a lot of support themselves. They have that cut off, and they're not capable of generating effective support for a large army. Winter Guard are basically across the board only good against light and medium targets, and the Jacks are only good against hard targets, but they have a maturity mismatch in when they connect. Like, it's a theme where the units don't work together, and it's missing essential tools like magic weapon, remove from play, really most kinds of supports, because you just have Kovnik Joe and your caster, and that's it.
I was going to say, like, it's a good theme, and I'm sorry, but it's a decent theme if it gets one of the tools, be it stealth mitigation, be it magic weapon. If it can get one tool, it's a good list.
That's fair, and there may be paradigms that work in it, but, like, it's way more effort than I'm willing to put into something with those hard limitations. The next one is Jaws of the Wolf, which, Arthur, you went over. The AD to preventing ambush benefit is super weak and rarely relevant. The other benefit of the theme is a mechanic benefit. Like, who cares? You're not going to take battle mechanics. You're really not. And having a benefit that's centric around that is not good. The free points you can get out of the theme are very small and not necessarily in first order models that you would be wanting to take. It's more to get your solo threshold up to critical mass. Again, the Jacks are basically left unsupported outside the caster. Now I guess Sorsha Zero is coming in. But, you know, you have the most freedom of unit types here, but they're not like hold the line effective combined arms units. And you're incentivized to play Jack Heavy anyways.
You are incentivized to play Jack Heavy. You do get the Widowmakers, which, you know, are a solid unit, and you do get Chaozzi, which are generally solid. But the theme bonuses, as you just pointed out, are absolute trash.
Yeah, then you have Legion of Steel, which I call colloquially the good one, where it's extremely limited, but the Jacks and the units kind of have the same mission, and you're actually almost doing a threat overload because the volume of things you can take is so high, and the benefits of the theme are incredibly strong. The counter charge and then the advance move, those abilities have a lot of play, and this list, like, it falls into the Kador paradigm of not very well-rounded, not playing to the faction's strengths, but a lot of casters support the direction it goes in, and its benefits are magnitudinally powerful. Of the themes, I think Legion of Steel is the only one that's, like, consistently tournament viable with a broad array of casters, but also has severe limitations, like limited access to magic weapon, no access to remove from play, etc., etc., all the tools that Kador's missing.
It also has no guns. I hate this theme list. I would love it if my opponent dropped this theme list every single game for an entire tournament.
Yeah, it can be tactically inflexible.
You're looking at defense 12, armor 14, pikemen.
Or, it's terrible. Or 18 if they shield wall.
It doesn't matter if you are armor 30. If you only have one box, you will die.
Yeah, and it makes a lot of its mileage on just raw body count. Next up, Wolves of Winter. This theme is incredibly poor. And I hear a lot of players talk about, you know, Witch 2 with Doom Reavers or Vlad 2 with Doom Reavers. And genuinely, I don't buy it. Your body count is too low. Your benefits are relatively weak. Like, you can extend your Doom Reavers threat, but that's the only support they're really getting. The Grey Lords are not independent and self-sufficient. They're pure support units. And, you know, frankly,
what about the anti-shooting package? The fact that you can do the minus shooting range and then you can't shoot within, what is it, 8 inches of those guys?
Nine inches.
You can create a really obnoxious bubble there.
What I've heard from people who've actually played it is that in practice, it doesn't work. Again, I haven't played it myself, but, like, the take home I got from others is, while you can do the positioning theoretically, actually accomplishing it is way more difficult. And even if you do accomplish it, in practice, it's not very effective.
Right. I mean, you're talking about taking Old Witch 2. She's going to maybe put up her big bubble. Then you're talking about moving a Colden Lord up more to, so he can put up his bubble. And then your opponent just looks at you and says, you know what? I'm just going to charge you in melee and kill everything.
Yeah, it doesn't work against principally melee forces. And like these were the kinds of lists that we fought back in Mark II, but they had higher volumes of bodies, and I think we all just got used to beating them. Like, they weren't wrecking house or anything. It's a standard-style list that's weaker than it was in previous iterations that I think a lot of old hands at the competitive scene are just used to dealing with. The one build where I would really recommend the theme is Zirkova 2. I think she's the only one that makes it work, and that is a list that is ultra focused on assassination, like myopically so. And that's the only thing.
How do you feel about
Strakov
1?
Actually, when I had in my mind list archetypes that we all became accustomed to beating routinely in Mark 2, it was Strakov 1 with Doom Reavers and some Jacks.
So theoretically, there is a little bit of a game with this list with Vlad 2 and the Spray Ponies, because between the Mirage 2-inch move, and then he could feed on, I mean, I think the threat range comes out to somewhere in the area of 24, which is really huge, that they can get sprays on a caster. But then again, they have to be able to get sprays on a caster.
Yeah, and that's one of the other problems, too, is it's Vlad interacting with a single unit type, and the only real benefit you're getting out of the theme is Mirage. If you look at your free point options, this is actually another theme that has just a really poor free point structure. Like, your payout is really low and the limitations are really harsh. Considering somebody like Vlad 2, he makes money out of a combined arms list. I would genuinely consider playing him unthemed versus playing him in Wolves of Winter.
People want to live the dream of, you know, at least putting the feet on Doom Reavers. And I get that. I mean, that's tremendously powerful. There's no denying that. And to be fair, I do think that the Mirage ability is one of the best theme bonuses, just period.
It's certainly strong. It's stronger than all the other Kador theme benefits.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's the models that you get. Like, battle mechanics, they're not going to do anything. Regular Turnians aren't going to do anything. Spray Ponies are okay. Doom Reavers are going to die to guns. There's nothing in the list to really shield them. That's the other weird thing about Kador is, for this very meat and potatoes style army, they really don't have like much in the way of even like shield guards or like non-magical, non-mythical type abilities. They just don't even have those.
Oh yeah, that was one of the other essential tools we neglected to mention, and I think why Winter Guard Command gets so much traction is Kador has like no shield guard.
They have that one, the Mad Dog, which nobody takes. But that's available.
Rager.
Oh, the Rager's a piece of shit.
Oh, it's the best shield guard Jack and Kador, though.
That is incorrect. Beast-09 with Sorsha is the best shield guard Jack and Kador.
Okay, sure, but that's a bond.
How often do you really, though, want to hyper-aggressive with him?
You know what? It actually got better since they gave him back immunity cold, because you can put Freezer on him again.
That's fair.
I do not understand why they took that away from me.
I mean, do you guys have anything else you want to come in on the first four Kador themes before we dive into Armored Company?
No, I think we've generally covered things.
Just I'll add one thing, and that is when you sit down and you try to make a list with any of these themes, it is like pulling teeth. It's horrendous.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's agonizing to try and build lists that do comprehensive coverage. Because, you know, in what we've discussed so far, Kador does not answer serious questions or ask serious questions. There's no big game-shifting twist apart from maybe Harkovich running a crap load of jacks. There's nothing deeply backbreaking or, and I say this in the Harbinger sense of the word, unfair. There's nothing that they're doing that feels like it already has a substantial leg up on you, and it's up to you to answer it just from a mechanic perspective. It's like, I have 200-ish boxes. Yay.
Actually, sorry, I just wanted to interject with something that I'd completely forgotten to bring up. I think I've brought this up many times in past episodes, but the magic number. The magic number in War Machine is 12 inches. If you can't get your heavies to threat 12 inches, then they can't tone to zones and threaten to kill literally anything your opponent puts into the zone. And until Sorsha Zero comes out, Kador can't do that.
Yeah, and even with Sorsha Zero, like, I want to emphasize, it's not costless to get her into lists. She's only allowed in Winter Guard Command and Jaws of the Wolf. And both, I mean, I would say those are, well, I mean, there's only five themes, but I would put both of those in the bottom half of Kador themes. And it is not free, because you have to have another caster with non-boundless charge speed support. And even then, you have to take another jack and sequester it away from that pack of benefits. And your jack
Technically,
is really
you don't.
Limited.
You can take Malakov for redline.
That's true. Although, and that's the biggest change for my money of Sorsha Zero coming out, is she allows Malakov into Jaws of the Wolf. That's the most substantial change for my money, because then you can put Malakov with boundless charge casters in a theme that pays out for having jacks.
Well, you could just grab Strykov 1 and Malakov and Sorsha 0 and potentially kill stuff from downtown. So I do think she is actually going to help the faction a decent amount with boundless charge.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a bi-caster thing. Like, you really have to look at it that way. Like, she helps Butcher. She helps Strykov 1. She helps Karchev to a certain extent, though he's absent other speed boosts. There's a couple of casters she helps, but it's not the entire faction across the board.
Yeah, but just magically hitting that 12-inch number, I think Jaws of the Wolf is going to get substantially better. Because it's not just like it used to be, you have Malakov's one, maybe two jacks that can maybe hit the 12-inch threat, and you can play around exclusively those. But now, like, theoretically, any warjack in any list that has at least a +2 speed buff can hit the magic number. I think that's a huge boon for Jaws of the Wolf.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm inclined to agree.
Let's move into Armored Core. And Arthur, I know this is kind of what brought you to this topic, and the sort of formulating it was the commentating on podcasts and in articles relatively recently on how Armored Core impacts the metagame. So why don't you just go ahead and share, like, some of what you see there and, you know, why you wanted to sort of discuss the place Kador is at.
Sure. I mean, look, when the theme list was finalized, everybody was talking about, oh, we're going to have these shock troopers and we're going to have those shock troopers. And with this caster, they're going to be faster. And with this caster, they're going to hit harder. And yeah, and I was looking at that and I'm like, okay, so you're going to make a list and you have 2-3 units of shock troopers, or in essence, you're going to have 15 man of war, plus the TIE common standard, as I like to call them. And people are like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to deal with all that armor. And in my head, I'm like, Malak is running around with 20 gators at armor 20 and 22. Like, you should not have a problem dealing with armor 16 or 17, potentially shield wall to 21. Like, there's 5 less models. What do you have to think about? But you brought up actually a good point when we were talking earlier about the support aspect of the Bombardiers, and that is 100% true, and that does change things.
Yeah, it's interesting, because that's the one thing the theme does well that Legion of Steel doesn't. Like, if you're looking for hard-hitting troops that'll get delivered, Legion of Steel is both faster, has a higher volume of attacks at comparable power, and survives by dint of massive redundancy. You know, you just have a ton of guys. And if you're looking purely at Armored Core from an armor and melee presence theme force, it doesn't make any sense. In fact, the only things that are really outstanding about the theme are its support shooting elements. So you have Bombardiers who got, you know, just a lot of new lifeblood breathed back into them. The Assault Chariot, which is quite good. The Strike Tanker, which is amazing. You know, basically everything that stands out about the theme exists in a support and shooting context, and that it can be somewhat tough to kill relative to other range troops. I mean, I say all this, and then Crucible Guard got its CID the very next one, and kind of had ranged and melee medium-based troops that showed up Armored Core on almost every conceivable axis, but
with better in-faction synergy.
Yeah. So, oh, there's no doubt. I mean, look, this, you know what, Crucible God's a great example, and I wasn't even gonna, I wasn't even thinking along those lines of going there, but like, if you just look at even their base unit, I forget exactly what they're called, I think just soldiers, and they basically all have military rifles, but they don't have military rifles. They have military rifles with range 12 and then a whole bunch of critical effects. And so they are like a great example of what I would call an A plus one, rather, whereas Kator is the A minus one.
Yeah, it really shows in the design, like, how do assault troopers and demo corps like exist in the same world as like theoretically balanced against each other? Or stormtroopers and bombardiers. Bombardiers have some of their own independent virtues, but like the direct comparison is really stark and really ugly for Kator's troops.
Really ugly.
It is, but I'll be honest, I've been playing almost exclusively mercs for the last, I don't know, 6-7 months. So Ashlyn loves Crucible God. So I do look forward to that. So I don't want to just slam Kator the whole time, because in reality, I still love the faction. It was my first faction. I own everything for this faction. I just want to feel a little bit more confident going and putting them on the table. I hate feeling as if, like, we're just a bunch of warm-up dummies so that if you beat me, you'll be a little bit better prepared for these other factions that are going to do what I do, but do it a little bit better. And that's the part that is just upsetting and makes me not really play them. And I am excited about the Man of War, and I'm going to be playing the Man of War. And I didn't really want to get too into it, but I feel like we've been so harsh on Kator this entire episode. I do think there is a little bit of Ray of Sunshine in this Man of War theme for us. And we were talking about that beforehand. My friends are going to be mad at me if I really get into it, but there's some good game with Butcher and the Bombardiers.
And I think Sorcha Zero is actually going to be a huge game changer for Jaws. So maybe there's some kind of double armor skew pair between Jaws and Man of Wars that'll actually make waves.
I still think the biggest problem, though, is, and I would love to. I mean, I own like 47 Mana War, so I mean, I'm a man who would love to be able to play them in a meaningful manner. But every time I keep thinking about the new themes, what I keep running into is the same core problem that Kator has across the faction right now, which is I still don't have magic weapons I can hand out, and I still don't have any way of getting past stealth. And even with a boundless charge making my threat ranges within the bare minimum of usefulness, I don't have any shenanigans, right? Like, I'm not moving my stuff across the table in any like fast and urgent manner, forcing my opponent to have to deal with it. I am, you know, trudging my guys into my enemy who's already in place and hoping that my now 12 inches is good enough to like make that not an auto loss.
Yeah, I mean, you know, here's the downside, right? And I think this is really what the problem is. So if you look at what's popular, and I can't speak for your meta or what you guys are, but, you know, in my area, if I go to a tournament here, I'm going to see Krix, I'm going to see Signar, and I'm going to see Grimkin. And I don't think I'm too far off the mark for pretty much everywhere. And if I see Grimkin and they have one, just one Gremlin Swarm, I have a problem with Kator.
Oh, yeah.
And if they have a Wraith Engine, I also have a problem with Kator.
Uh-huh.
Signar doesn't really have that question that it asks, but the other two do, and I'm going to run into those other two factions more than once over the course of an event, and that is what leads me to say you can't bring Kator to an event because you have no answers. I mean, you rely on your caster, possibly Ruin. So you have your caster and you have Ruin, and that's it. Because you're not going to take the Spray Ponies. You're not going to take Turnians. You're not going to take, really, Doom Reavers. So your opponent just sits there and like, okay, I'm going to put one Gremlin Swarm into this zone, and you're done. And I don't have to do a damn thing on that side of the table for the rest of the game.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And that's the nub of the issue. Like this episode, and why I was intrigued by it, is not just griping about Kador for its own sake, or because we're bitter about it, or because we want to call into question the design decisions. It's exactly that. There are things about the faction and the way it's structured right now that make it long run not viable. And, you know, as weird as this sounds, this is intended to be an advice topic on why these things don't work and what to look for. Like, the outpouring of support for Kador and like, yeah, play Kador, Kador's metagame relevant again, etc., that we saw from commentators several weeks ago was, you know, principally from people who didn't play Kador and didn't intend to play Kador in competitive events. You know, so it's kind of like, talk is cheap, but where's the actual change? Because Kador still, even with the presence of Armored Core, it doesn't address those fundamental problems that we brought up earlier, unless this Butcher 1 and support shooting supremacy thing really bears out. And even then, you'll still consistently have big holes like a single Gremlin Swarm. And, you know, if you want to achieve competitive success, don't play Kador. Playing the faction is not a decision that is consistent with achieving reliable wins. And while there may be hidden gold there that lets you function at the level of other factions, it's just buried so much deeper. Like, I went to Scorn, I'm tinkering with Menoth and with Convergence, because, like, I could keep digging in Kador, I could go out of theme, I really could try and see if there's something buried there, or I could do something which yields consistent success without months of, you know, just painstaking work, not to get, you know, something that's better than everyone else, but to get something that's on the same level.
And that's just it. I mean, look, so if you guys recall, I assume everybody's familiar, and I hate to call the person out or use the name, but it's a good story and it's factual. So Trevor Christensen from Chain Attack, and I don't really know the guy personally at all, but in Mark II, he played nothing but Scorn, and Scorn was considered one of the weaker factions in Mark II. But he played the heck out of them, and he used every possible rule and trick to his advantage. He was doing arm locks and pushes and all this other stuff, and he couldn't win. He might make the top eight, but he couldn't win anything. And then eventually a bunch of his friends said, look, stop with the Scorn, play Legion. So he picks up Legion, and I think it was like within a week or two, he goes and wins the last chance qualifier. So, you know, it's something like that, you know, where I guess you could play the heck out of Kador and maybe you'll get good. But if you switched factions, I believe your results will be much better.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, Trevor's a great public example, especially with the almost immediate colossal success. But I went through a very much similar transformation in Mark II as well, playing Scorn for like 3 years. Yeah. And it was exactly the same sort of thing. And when giving advice to people, like, you know, when I'm coaching somebody who's new or developing or whatever, I always relate to them my story of sticking with Scorn, like, way beyond the point where it was, you know, the writing was on the wall that this was not competitively viable, but I stuck in there, and it was a really poor move. And I switched to Kador, and things just, like, freed up for me. I was able to consistently achieve results. And, you know, everything that I had developed, you know, playing under this tremendous burden of playing Scorn at the time, like, just liberating. My sense of fun in the game went through the roof, you know, because I wasn't having to struggle. Turn around 2 years later, I'm actually in the exact reverse position. Like, this Kador stuff is just not worth it anymore. F this, I'm going to Scorn.
Good thing I have that faction too. But yeah, no, I'm a fan of Scorn. I do like Scorn. Yeah, it's just, look, Kador, in my opinion, is just, it's full of A-1. I mean, you know, I just, for funsies, I will every so often just play a quick game of Krix. And so the other day I was playing Dark Host, and, you know, you just look at like a Bane Warrior. And I hate to do this, but if you compare them to an Iron Fang Pikeman, it's like, here we have a POW 13 with a critical knockdown. Over here, we basically have a POW 13 Weapon Master because Dark Shroud is basically +2 strength. I have a UA that just returns D3 +1 guys. I have Tough. Over here, I don't have Tough. It's just, there's no comparison. I'm immune to free strikes. I'm not immune to free strikes. How those two units are the same point cost, I actually don't understand.
Well, because pikemen used to be defense 16, and they're still costed like
Yes. They
should be.
Yeah, and Winter Guard infantry used to be defense 17. You take that away from them, and you leave them with just Kovnik Joe. Like, if you look at it, Kovnik Joe is not meaningfully better than the Piper, and he's the only support. This is Kador's big premium buff receiving unit, but they're receiving like no buffs. What's the point?
I actually do feel that, you know, like, to be fair, Iron Flesh was Kador's signature spell. I mean, it really was, and they pretty much just removed it from the game. And I don't know how to make people realize like how impactful that is if they don't play Kador, but, and I don't want to say it would be like if Signa lost Arcane Shield, it was just gone, but it's kind of like that.
All right. Well, does anyone else have anything they want to pitch in? Cause I think that pretty much rounds us out, right?
It might. I mean, I feel bad. Like, I feel like a little dirty. Like, we just beat up Kador.
So, I mean, I guess my main complaint, I would say, obviously, you know, the goal here is I want to be playing Kador again because it's fun to play it in a competitive, not because, you know, I'd be hating on PP. I mean, I guess my biggest complaint with the design with Kador that I don't understand is that, as a guy who plays minions, the Gator release cycle was amazing for minions, right? Like, it included basically every, like, a model for every single weak point that
it was a total renaissance. The only problem was they didn't put enough pigs in there.
Right, exactly. But for a Gator player, like, it took the faction from being a, you know, I play it because I happen to like Gators and, you know, that's my thing, to a, oh, like, this is as good as any faction in the game now that I have all the tools. And they gave quite literally all the tools. Like, there's nothing in faction that feels like missing at all. Like, I have buffs, I have cool shenanigans, I have multiple ways of playing the casters. And it's amazing, and the models were great, and I'm just super happy with all those releases, right? And I look at that, and I look at how well-balanced it was. I looked at how, like, on point it was with the releases, and then I look at Kador, and I think to myself, like, what's stopping them from having applied the same thing to Kador? All of that was missing from the release cycle for the Mana Wars. Like, they're still mopey, they're too slow. I mean, sure, they have a lot of survivability now, but it's not relevant if you're not in a scoring position.
But even with the theme benefits, you're not happy?
The theme benefits are just okay for Kador. I don't think they're that good.
Well, wait. To be fair, the Armored Core allowing every unit to basically advance move puts them in a pretty good spot.
It's like the old dwarf theme from Mark II.
Yeah, I think
it was Osram's theme, plus 4 inches of deploy, basically. You can still put it on chariots, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you can. They don't grant it to themselves,
And you could put it on the dragon, so you can have dragons advance moving, and then, again, with Vlad 2, it's kind of an issue.
Yeah, but it's not, like, it doesn't scare me or even impress me compared to a lot of the other stuff that's already on the table. Like, it's, like, the threat radius, it's not like Mark 2 Vlad 2, where, you know, like, top of 1, you were killing their caster. You know, this is a, like, oh, you moved a really good piece up, but it's by itself. You know, like, the army is not with it. Like, you haven't piled a bunch of, like, oh gosh, what am I going to do with this threat?
So listen, I agree with that. And the only thing I would like to do is, and I guess maybe we can all take a turn at this, but rather than just complain or anything like that, if we offered at least some suggestion as to what could be done to make things better. I do think Armored Core is actually a pretty good theme for us, although I do hate the plus one to repair roll as a bonus, because that's just terrible.
The second theme with a mechanic benefit? F that. Why?
How is it that Sorsha 3 got the Field Marshal flank? Like, that would have been so much cooler if the theme force had that role. That Warjacks just gained flank. It would have been cooler. That's all I said. I didn't say it would be fair. I didn't say it would be balanced. I only said it would be cooler.
Because up until they fixed the theme, you run 4 chariots, you advance move all of them, you run everything, and you set up to just do bloody murder.
Well, also, if you took away that field marshal, you would take away literally the only reason to play Sorsha 3 with Man of War.
How dare you? Those Scathier Clouds are amazing. Fight me, IRL.
I guess we're fighting.
Okay. You're going to live that dream where you take a Devastator and push all their stuff into the clouds.
No, I mean, like, it means that they have to actually allocate meaningful resources to a zone because you just put that wall through. I think it's really good, but that's a story for another day.
Yeah, she's a pretty good caster. I don't know. I kind of want to see how she plays out. I think Stoke the Fires is a really, really good spell.
And good God, yeah, that Scourge, the Super Scourge, because, like, not that much is cold immune or immune to stationary. It's, like, trolls and, like, a couple of Warcasters, Warlocks, and a couple of factions.
Fair. But my suggestion, if I could, would be to just... The themes probably do need a little bit of a go-over, a little bit more of a combined arms. Like, I often think of, like, well, if Commandant Irusk, who's, like, this supposedly masterful genius tactician, would he ever go to war with any one of the existing themes? I don't think he would. I think he would be like, okay, I'm going to need some rifle corps over here, and I need a unit Iron Fang pikemen, and then when we get there, I want these shock troopers to hold that position. Like, that's how I see it. So, if anything, how about a new theme called Commandant's Command?
Yeah, Commandant's Command, 5th Border Legion, like Winter Guard Command, but less myopically restrictive.
Well, okay, so in all fairness, like, the fluff of War Machine is the battle that's actually taking place is not the full battle. It's just, like, one small subsection of the battle. So it kind of, like, makes sense for it to be a more homogenous clump, because it's, like, this is, like, the company that you're leading, but, like, the fire support's behind you or whatever, dealing with something else. But, yes.
Well, the thing is, like, the fluff, you know, the fluff justification is really flimsy because there's fluff that supports combined arms as well. It's just willfully not chosen.
Well, to be fair, according to the fluff, virtually every faction is a combined arms faction.
Yeah.
And you can't have literally every faction in the game be combined arms. That's how you end up with late Mark II meta.
Right, but, I mean, I would assert that Kador is basically alone in the situation it faces where you have single unit type themes that don't adequately or effectively support themselves.
Well, I think that Kador's, I mean, this biggest deficit is it simply doesn't have a faction native way of granting the things it needs right now. And what's even more ludicrous with that is when I think about the Trencher releases, right, where they went out of their way to reissue to Signar tools so that they could be using the Trencher theme. And then, you know, Signar gets a dog that removes stealth. It gets all these other, like, crazy useful tools. And, you know, Kador can't seem to find a dog to remove stealth.
All right.
Or
all right. Let's take off our design thing and actually give a positive. So, like, my advice, and, like, if you want a substantive contribution as a Kador player, I would highly recommend exploring out of theme, particularly with Kador's strongest casters who are in many ways benched by themes. So I'm thinking here of Sorsha 1, who for my money is the strongest in the faction, to Butcher 3, who does not have a great home in a theme force, or even to a certain extent, Sorsha 2, as much as she's fallen, or really any of the other casters who have an okay, like Vlad 2 has okay homes in theme. I would recommend, if you are really committed to playing Kador, exploring out of theme and layering in tools you didn't have before, like bombardiers who are now effective, strike tankers which offer useful damage output, that sort of thing. Try the powerful casters, try them out of theme. Oh, and one final follow-on to that. Because for scenario you need massive redundancy in units, solos, and jacks, probably play on the cheaper end of jacks. Behemoth, obviously very strong. Take Behemoth. Take stuff like Kodiaks. And then to ensure that you have high solo redundancy, favor low-cost, high survivability solos like the Marksman, and throw in, like, Chaozzi Eliminators. They're a scoring unit. They're 5 points. You're golden.
So, personally for me, I think there's a lot of exploration left in Kador. Like, I've recently started picking up the Grim 1 list that Jaden won Lock and Load Masters with. And, like, up until I saw that list, I thought Creel Company was basically unplayable. And, like, I'm not sure if that Grim 1 list is actually that good, but it's definitely opening up a lot of avenues that I wasn't even considering before. I basically was refusing to play a theme because I couldn't get it to work in the ways I'd been looking at it previously. And so I think there might be some like weird niche stuff out there pre-existing in Kador that just might not have been explored yet, that like on its face looks bad, but it just kind of magically comes together on the table. I mean, the odds of any individual thing being that way is very low, but I think there's probably something out there, and I'm betting it's Man of Wars because they haven't been explored as much yet. So I think messing around with Bombardier spam, I think like super armor skew, some kind of weird four chariot list. I think there's a lot of exploration that can be done right now, now that all the models are out. And while I sincerely doubt that it's going to catapult Kador to like the top of the standings, and it's going to be in every DGI placement from now until God knows when, but I think it's definitely going to be better once people have more fully explored the options.
I would have to agree with that. And to be fair, the Armored Core theme list is the one that just got out of CID, and it's probably the best theme list in Kador, or at least it's the most well-rounded and complete.
There's definitely pain points with the others, but I think there's a lot of stuff out there. And Sorcia Zero, she's going to be a game changer. I think she can fundamentally alter certain lists, namely Jaws. So I think with the new releases, I think there's going to be a coherent pair for Kador that's not going to be just completely butt-blasted by tech issues. I don't know what it is. If I were to bet, it's going to be Jaws, Man of War, but I'm not seeing it. And I guess I'm just trying to encourage people to muck around with stuff. Or like Trolls. Trolls were in a really bad place for a long time, and then people started playing Doomy 2, they started playing Doomy 3, people pulled out Gunbjorn, people started making Band of Heroes work, and then everything just got super easy street once we got Storm of the North and all its releases. But that's a story for another day.
Well, again, though, you know, these other factions, like I said, they have answers to meta questions, and Kador still struggles with that. So until that changes, I do think Kador is going to continue to struggle overall. And sure, they'll win certain matchups, no problem. But again, the point of this episode was to talk about their viability over 6-7 rounds or
so,
4 rounds.
Follow-up question for you then. Do you think they're going to struggle with pretty much any well-balanced meta, or is it just the current meta as it is? Like, do you think if Kador received no changes, and let's say Crick's participation dropped by half, would Kador all of a sudden be fine? Or let's say Grimkin, or one of the big ones you mentioned. Because, like, for example, I think you mentioned where in New York are you again?
Staten Island. New York City.
Yeah. You're seeing a lot of Crix, you're seeing a lot of Signar, you're seeing a lot of Grimkin. Where we are, it's like all Hordes all the time, plus Convergence. And, like, there could be up to 4 Exelon Thexus players who show up to a Steamroller. That hasn't happened in a while, but, like, it's very different from what you're seeing. And I'm betting Kador would be a lot better here because it's a lot meatier, it's a lot beefier, it's a lot brawlier. And so
it sounds like it. We also have the only Rhett meta because we have Mike Ireland pretty close by. And so
we used to have a pretty extreme Rhett meta here. We like it went from Kador to Rhett to Exelon Thexus, and then it just kind of like turned into Hordes. But so I guess
I quit Kador because of our meta. It doesn't work.
Yeah, well, no, the Kador was a long time ago. It was like BDM Mark III. But I guess just like to posit it, like how much does the meta have to change without Kador changing for Kador to be in a fine spot? Because like we're complaining about a lot of very specific things. Like how realistic is it that they drop to a level where you stop caring and you're just playing the numbers game?
So that's a great question. I think if there is less incorporeal and less stealth, then Kador grows in power. But when there's more incorporeal and more stealth, and I'm even going to go out and say, and more cloud walls, which we're also in a, at least here, pretty heavy cloud wall meta. These are the areas that Kador struggles with. Now, the Spriggan helps a ton with the clouds, and so I don't really even want to bring up the clouds too much, But the other two, the Stealth and the Incorporeal, are just beyond Kador's reach. I mean, it's it. There is no answer in the faction other than your caster.
Yeah, the other one I would bring up is long-range, like, heavy-killing melee threats. Those are a huge problem. And even, you know, what we talked about with Sorsha Zero, like, yeah, she gets you the stand-in-zone solution, but she's not an all-case solution. And even with Sorsha Zero, a lot of factions that are leaning on a strong melee presence still healthily out-threat Kador. So that's a big problem that's going to be persistent.
You're also talking about, and to be fair, I mean, we're talking about really a 14-point investment. Because to me, if I'm going to run Sorsha Zero, I really want a Rager because I want the shield guard. So she's 4 points, or I'll assume she's 4 points, and then I have to spend 10 on a Rager. So you're talking about a 14-point include, which is rough.
Yeah, unlike juniors in any other faction, there is no cheap way to get her into a list.
See, the cool thing about, like, especially in Signar's case is, and it doesn't work obviously in every list, but they're like, okay, I'm going to take a Firefly. And the Firefly has so much synergy with so many aspects of the army, Kador doesn't have that.
Yeah, the cheap end of Kador's Jax is basically dead points.
Well, maybe you guys shouldn't have played Karchev so well.
Oh yeah, that was the problem.
Yeah, it's all Karchev's fault. If I can just, because I feel that we're kind of wrapping up, but I have one thing that's very important to talk about, and that is the Boker Brawl. It's taking place in October. It's, you know, a friend of mine, I mean, I guess I'm part of the NJSOBs, and there are 10 technical spots left for teams, but we already know that 5 teams at least are pretty much spoken for by basically one crew of people from South Jersey. So people may want to register for that right away. And then the other thing that not everybody realizes, but you do have a point qualifier, which is a Masters event, I believe. And then we have a what we're calling the Big Base Brawl, where Seth Cohn has literally picked up 20 huge bases, and he's prepared to literally have two pods or two separate tournaments of 32 players where the top 10 people will each get a huge base. And I could be wrong on the top 10. It might be top 8. I'm not 100% sure. But the point is there's a lot there. And you could look that up by going to thebookerbrawl.com and check it out.
Yeah, we'll definitely put that in the description for the episode. Thanks. I had completely forgotten about that. I don't think it's in the card for me this year just because I've already planned out all my trips for the year. But one of my main goals as, like, a competitive War Machine player is I ultimately want to play in virtually every, like, North American, like, competitive meta. So I still have to do, like, I have to make it to the Canada events, but I also have to make it to East Coast, New York. I want to go to Nova at least once. But yeah, I definitely might try and go there next year.
It's the second year of the Boker Brawl, and we're already toying with adding Magic and X-Wing to even this year, although it'll pretty much be low key. But by the time we get around to next year, I have a feeling that Seth will have grown this thing into a full-blown con.
Yeah, that's super cool, man. It's a wild card qualifier, you said? Wild card qualifier, team tournament, and then there's the huge base side event, right?
Yeah, so there's the team tournament, there is the huge base thing, and then there is the Masters event, which gives you points. Towards,
yeah, the wild card qualifier. Yeah,
yeah,
we're running one in August, which I should, I guess, also plug. August 5th, Mountain View, Northern California. Shout out to any SoCal guys who want to drive up for it. It's gonna be great. sorry to counter plug your plug, but
That's fine. That's fine.
Now we're not gonna be able to cash that check. Way to go, Mark.
Wait. We get paid to let him plug. Why wasn't I seeing any of this money?
I mean...
Give me money!
This sounds like an internal problem.
Yeah.
I really need to be in charge of Dominate for Two's vast financial accounts.
All 15 of the checking accounts and the vast sums of money we've been kiting. I mean, I hope nobody ever hears this.
That's Ben's own income stream right now. He's backdoor profiting off this. But if you want, I can turn over, like, the minus X dollars a year to you.
I'll pass.
All right.
Okay. Well, I think we've devolved into enough shit posting. Any other final plugs you want to say before we call it quits?
No. The Poker Pro was pretty much it. I really am glad that you guys gave me the opportunity to come on. I had a great time. Yeah. Hopefully one day we'll meet each other at an event, because I know we haven't met in person. But and to everybody out there, don't hate me. I'm speaking my heart. This is how I feel about Kador. I know I'll probably get flamed and ripped apart and talked about, hey, I could do this and I could do that and I'm going to do this. And okay. And if you can do that with Kador, you're a better player than me. I do not claim to be the best player in the world. I think I'm pretty good, and that's it. That's all I give myself, is a pretty good. So if you think that you're better than pretty good, then you could take everything I've said and throw it right out the window.
So I think the perfect sign off for us is as follows. Kador players, either get good or quit the faction. Cut it right there, Alex.
Thank you for listening to Dominate for Two. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Got a question or an episode idea? Email us at dominateforto.podcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, I'm already persona non grata in the Kador group, so I'm pretty sure I'm going to catch a lot of the hate no matter what.
Dude, I'm so ready to be a heel.
Oh my god. Yeah, Dominate for Two. We've done our face heel turn.